Coming up on Golf Today, Rory McIlroy met the media in Scotland, but most of the questions were about Pinehurst. What did the world number two have to say about number two and the one that got away? World number one Nelly quarterback in action at the Evian after a rash of bad luck and missed cuts is a bounce back and a third major in the cards this week. And if you need someone to kick a game-winning field goal, Robbie Gould is your guy. But can he make some big putts in Lake Tahoe? We'll ask him coming up on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Final round of the U.S. Adaptive Open concludes today from Sand Creek Station in Newton, Kansas. This national championship showcases the world's best golfers with disabilities. We'll have highlights and reports throughout this very show. This is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Amy Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. Another big day in the game.
Yeah, we're going to hear from a couple of the biggest stars out there. We're going to hear from Rory McIlroy, Nelly Korda. Marty Fish is joining us, so maybe he can actually help this guy recover from the disappointment of losing his B-flight tennis match a couple of days ago.
Speaking of recovering from disappointment, yes, the world number two is back in action this week as well. This week, the Rolex Series returns with the Genesis Scottish Open at the Renaissance Club, North Berwick, Scotland. And yes, last year, not much disappointment for Rory McIlroy. Thanks to that two iron, he laced into the wind to 11 feet and converted the birdie putt for victory. And the win marked his 24th on the PGA Tour. Look at the putt. Wasn't sure this was going. Had a nice chuckle at the end. A big guffaw. The first player to win the Genesis Horizon Irish Open, Open Championship. And there's that beautiful plaque. A two iron, that tells you how much it was into the wind. From 202 yards, that plaque in the fairway commemorating that great moment.
The 2023 champ is making its first competitive appearance since that agonizing near miss at the U.S. Open last month, where he finished runner-up to Bryson DeChambeau. After the loss, McIlroy took to social media, saying he was planning to take a few weeks away from the game to process, build himself up for his title defense this week. Well, McIlroy's two wins this season, the Zurich Classic of New Orleans with Shane Lowry and the Wells Fargo Championship, three other top five finishes in 14 starts on tour this season. With more on the world number two, we send it out to Rex Hoggard.
It's been 3 weeks since Rory squandered a two-shot lead with five holes to play at the U.S. Open, and those 3 weeks have given him time to process what happened on that Sunday at Pinehurst and what it means to his career.
I think the one thing that I'll, you know, the short putt on 16 is the one that I'll probably rue the most, because it was a pretty simple putt. You know, the putt on 18 was pretty difficult. But you know, there's not a lot that I would change about what I did on Sunday. You know, for the first 14 holes, it's the best I've played in that position in a long, long time. So, but yeah, look, there's moments where, you know, my mind sort of wanders back to, you know, those final four holes, and you know, I wish that things would have been different, but you know, as long as I learn from them and move on, and you know, it's good to get back on the course this week at the Scottish Open, and then obviously have another opportunity at a major next week at Trin.
You've had other disappointments in your career. Where does this one rank?
I think as time goes on, it doesn't. I think it hurt. You know, as you maybe achieve more in the game, you know, you can sort of soften the blow a little bit by looking at everything that I've been able to accomplish. You know, it's been a while since I've won that a major, so it hurt, but I felt worse after some other losses. You know, I felt worse after Augusta in 11. You know, I felt worse after St Andrews in 2022. So, you know, look, it's up there. It was a tough loss, but certainly not the toughest.
Looking back to last year here at the Scottish Open, such a dramatic finish on your way to victory. You've talked about this in the past. Why does it mean so much to you to win a national championship?
I just think they're the oldest and most historic titles in our game. They've been around for a long, long time. And I've always loved the history of the game, so I love looking at the names that have won the tournament before, and to win trophies that, Sam Snead is on, or Jack Nicklaus, or Gary Player or over in these parts, you know, like a Nick Faldo or Sandy Lyle or Seve. You know, that's a really cool thing to me. It sort of connects you with the people that came before you. And, you know, it seems like more and more that the National Opens are really the only tournaments that can do that nowadays.
Rory will turn the page this week at the Scottish Open, where he shows up at the Renaissance Club as the defending champion. His victory last year over Robert McIntyre was highlighted by a 202-yard 2-iron to the final hole to set up a walk-off birdie. Officials this week have installed a plaque in the 18th fairway to commemorate that shot. But unfortunately, the original plaque misspelled Rory's name, and he told reporters on Wednesday he was glad they got it right the second time around. Guys?
Good stuff from Rex. And good to see Rory McIlroy smiling a little bit. I wasn't exactly sure how he would look. I was fascinated to hear him say this was not the worst loss that he felt like he had to overcome. He talked about Augusta in 2011. What did he do the next month? He won a U.S. Open by 8. He talked about the Open Championship at St. Andrews. What did he do the next month? He won a third FedEx Cup title. I wonder how he will bounce back this time.
Yeah, there is evidence in Rory's career that some pretty tough losses and tough periods have actually led to him finding the right direction. Certainly on the course, you could argue that as well. He went through a couple of management companies and had bruising experiences there before kind of setting out on his own pathway. So he definitely has a record of learning from painful losses. The one at Pinehurst is definitely going to sting him right there. But as we just found out with the plaque, you know, this is why you have erasers in life to kind of correct things that have gone wrong. But he's definitely the kind of type who will... He's got a lot of laurels to rest on here in this game. It's a very different scenario if you go through that at Pinehurst and you don't have a major championship. In some ways, he might feel as though he doesn't have because it has been so long, but he does still have 4 trophies on his mantelpiece. I think that might soften the blow a little bit, but he's always been one of those types who he wants it, and he wants it really, really badly, and we saw that, particularly at St. Andrews, where he was crying on his wife's shoulder after that one. We saw it again at Pinehurst when he just looked shell-shocked leaving and sitting in the scorer's tent. But he does not allow himself to be defined by that, by what happens inside the ropes. That's probably a pretty good attitude to take right now.
We'll have much more on Rory McIlroy in the second hour, including he addressing criticism of his caddy, Harry Diamond. Now, for the third straight year, the Genesis Scottish Open and the ISCO Championship are being co-sponsored by the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour, with the fields consisting of players from both circuits. Keene Trace began hosting the ISCO Championship in 2018. Coverage begins tomorrow at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Golf Channel. And you will see sponsor exemption Neil Shipley, who was a low amateur at the Masters Tournament and the U.S. Open in 2024, makes his third start on the PGA Tour as a professional following the Rocket Mortgage Classic and the John Deere. He finished T9 in his first professional debut on the PGA Tour Americas in June after earning PGA Tour Americas status in qualifying school earlier the same month. And I believe we have Neil joining us now from Keene Trace Golf Club. Neil, it's great to see you. What are these early days as a professional been like for you?
It's been a whirlwind, you know, kind of been jumping straight in and kind of trying to figure out a lot of things on the fly, but it's been really enjoyable and love being out here on the PGA Tour for the last couple of weeks.
Neil, you've had what would be considered a kind of a dream run for most golfers. You're low amateur at the Masters, low amateur at the U.S. Open. Was there any particular point during that stretch where you just kind of pinched yourself and realized this is my life now?
I think, you know, on the plane ride from Pinehurst, I got a text from my agent that we had gotten into some of these events. And at that point, I was kind of really pinching myself. It's something that maybe 6-7 months ago, I didn't think was going to be possible or a possible route for us. And, you know, it's just awesome to be out here and get this experience early in my career.
What's the biggest difference between playing in an amateur event and being at a professional tournament? It's just golf, right? But are there significant differences?
Yeah, I think a lot of the off the golf course stuff is really what's different. You know, the travel's more back to back. You know, you finish up on Sunday, you fly out that night or Monday morning, and you got to get to work on Monday, especially for a guy who hasn't seen these golf courses before. You know, I'm having to play, you know, 9 holes on, you know, Monday, Wednesday, and Tuesday. trying to manage my body and manage my energy levels has been kind of a big goal for us, especially since I've been going for such a long stretch now.
You made your PGA Tour debut a couple of weeks ago at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. You finished top 20. I know you've got a lot of confidence in your own game, but were you genuinely surprised at how well you performed in that kind of fishbowl in your first week out there?
I guess I wasn't really surprised because of the, I'd seen what professional golf is like at the Masters and the US Open, and I knew that my style of golf could compete on the PGA Tour. To be honest with you, I feel like I left a lot of shots out there at Rocket Mortgage and certainly could have finished higher. We're just trying to kind of focus, take those positives, from a great week like that, but keep building on it and keep getting, a stronger game so I can compete out here on a regular basis.
This is your third straight start out there, Neil. I'm curious, do you still have that feeling of kind of the first day in high school, of trying to find your way around? And what has been the biggest learning, just in terms of the logistics? What's been the outside the ropes learning in the last few weeks?
Yeah, I think definitely feel like that first week or two in high school still. I'm not, don't necessarily know all the guys out here. Starting to pick up some faces and, some guys have been really nice to me last few weeks. So that's been awesome to have some support from the other guys out here. I guess biggest learning curve off the golf course, alluding to what I said earlier, is just managing my body and energy levels. And, that's not only with how much I'm practicing or working out. A lot of it has to do with, how many media obligations I take on or, what I'm doing off the golf course and, giving myself that time to reset and re-energize for the next day and, to continue the stretch of golf we've been on.
I remember struggling to remember my high school locker combination. Speaking of high school, Neil, listen, you got the long hair a la Jeff Spicoli in Fast Times. You remind me of a young Charlie Hoffman or Hunter Mahan when he had the long locks. What's the story behind the hair?
Yeah, well, in high school, I went to an all-boys Catholic school, and, we had to keep it high and tight everywhere. And, I kept it that way first couple, years in college. And then if you look at my pictures at James Madison, my roster pictures, I have short hair, and all of a sudden it grew, to something kind of similar to this. And you just started playing good golf, so I've just kept it.
What does it feel like to have already become a golf meme this early in your career, Neil? There's that image that seems to go around a lot on social media from golfers of that look on your face in the Butler cabin during the ceremony. How many of your buddies have actually sent that to you at this point?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I got so much crap for that from everyone. It started maybe only 2 or 3 hours after the ceremony. We went back to my family's house for the week and, had a little celebration, and my brother pulled it up and was just going at me for it. It was pretty funny, and I'm lucky that I have family like that and friends that keep me humble and keep my feet on the ground, especially when I've got everything else going on right now.
Well, your feet are on the ground, but I know you got big dreams. What do you want out of this game and this career?
Yeah, I mean, I want to compete on the PGA Tour. I want to win majors. I want to be one of the best players in the world, honestly. Definitely have a lot of work to do, but I definitely think my game has that potential, and I'll be excited to, go on this journey. I'm really excited to be on this journey, and I know it's going to be a marathon to get where I want to be, but, I'm excited for that challenge.
Well, keep the hair, keep the dreams, and have a great week. Thanks so much for your time, bud.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Take care.
Well, someone who's looking for a fresh start this week, world number one Nelly Korda, 6 wins this season, but coming off 3 straight missed cuts, 2 of them in the majors. Another major shot for her this week, though. More on that coming up next.
Swing your swing.
Not some idea of a swing.
Not a swing you saw on TV.
Not that swing you wish you had.
No, swing your swing.
Capable of greatness?
Prized only by you.
Perfect in its imperfection.
Swing your swing.
Swing your swing.
Swing your swing.
I think you hold it.
Swing your swing.
Effectue ton swing.
Swing your swing.
Swing your swing. I know, I did.
The third edition of the U.S. Adaptive Open concludes today at Sand Creek Station in Newton, Kansas. The event showcases the world's best golfers with disabilities by providing them a stage to compete for a national championship. And let's take a look at some of the ongoing action from Sand Creek Station. This is Natasha Stasiuk competing in the intellectual impairment category from 8 feet to save par at the third.
Yeah, great putt, sigh of relief. Amanda Cunha now competing in the vision impairment category, second shot at the first with a fairway medal.
That was a solid strike. Gets it up. Ooh, on the green, two putts for par. Here's a familiar face to so many of us, Amy Bockerstedt, competing in the intellectual impairment category. Her dad on the bag lines up a 15-footer for par on 11.
Wow. Saw a lot of that during the WM Phoenix Open, didn't we? How about multiple limb amputee Rose Veldman, third shot on 11 from the fairway.
Gets that up over the ridge to 4 feet. Next up, Sophia Howard. She's competing in the upper limb impairment category. 10-footer for par and 17.
Ooh, walk it in. 4-3. 2022 overall female champ Kim Moore. Lengthy birdie putt just off the green.
Little Texas wedge in Kansas. She tapped that one in for par. Here's Bailey Bish competing in the neurological impairment category. A lengthy eagle putt, par 5, 4th.
Love eagle putts. Mine lip
Yours
out.
Don't do that though, Damon.
Sure don't. Her first career eagle. Congratulations, Bailey. Here's Ricky Riley competing in the short stature impairment category. Ooh.
That's an awesome save from way downtown.
About it.
Here's the 2023 seeded player winner, Mac Togisala, at the par 4 first hole, chipping from below the green.
Oh, Mad Max, learned about him yesterday, the happiest kid in town, able to save par. Here's multiple limb amputee Jordan Thomas, second at the par 313.
Rolling it back to a deep pin location. So close, taps it in for par. Chad Pfeiffer, he's competing in the lower limb impairment category, second at the par 3 third from the roof.
Great touch. Tap in for par to stay at one under. This is Issa Lareb, but competing as a multiple limb amputee, pitching from just short of the green.
A nice little bump and run action there. Here's the 2022 overall male champion, Simon Lee, in the intellectual impairment category. This for birdie on 6 from 20 feet.
Come on now.
Gets him to one under on the round, and here's the current leaderboard in the men's division. Defending champion Kip Popert, he's hanging on to that lead, and he's got quite a margin, a 5-stroke lead. But Simon Lee is right there, and Brendan Lawler, perhaps the best disabled golfer in Europe, right behind.
Been a great 3 days. We're going to take a look at the women's overall. Bailey Bish just saw some highlights, and Kim Moore as well. Bailey with a 4-shot lead. How about that? By the way, trophy ceremony, 5 p.m. Eastern on Golf Central. Won't want to miss that. It'll be a very special afternoon in Newton, Kansas. Busy week in the game. As you know, the LPGA heads overseas for the 4th of 5 women's majors to be played in 2024, where French woman Céline Boutier tries to defend her title in her homeland.
World number one Nelly Korda is returning to action this week, coming off a missed cut at the KPMG Women's PGA Championship, where he shot an 81 in the second round. She will go on to withdraw from an LET event due to a dog bite sustained while in Seattle. Bit of an interesting season for Nelly. 6 wins, including the Chevron Championship, but missed cuts in the following majors. She spoke to the media today in France.
Can you just explain where you got bitten by the dog and what was the issue that you had to deal with?
Yeah, just I got bit in my leg. And just had to go through some medical things.
Where was the bite?
On my thigh.
On your leg. And yeah. It just jumped out and bit you, as from what I can gather.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know you were walking past it or something?
No, I was in a coffee shop in Seattle. Yeah.
And you're 100% now?
Yeah, I'm getting better. I took 1 week off. Didn't even look at my clubs after KPMG and was just healing, and then been practicing. Was lucky that Jamie came in, my coach came in for 2 days with me to practice with me, and practice the past week and tried to get ready for this event. I think I've gone through every emotion possible, and it's just July on the golf course. I love this game. I love the bad. I love the good. The bad makes you appreciate the good, and that's just how it is. It's sports. If you care so deeply about it, you're just going to go through the wave of the roller coaster. And I have a great team. I have amazing family that keep me very grounded and keep my perspective positive. And they lift me up even when I'm down. And they make sure that, you know, we all stay very, very grounded and very, very humble, because sometimes, you know, you can get a little too ahead of yourself, but the game humbles you enough as well, which I've learned a great deal recently. But that's what I love about it. I mean, I'm going to go out here, and even if I'm not playing well, I'm just going to give it 100%, and I'm going to go back. I'm going to work even harder, and then I'm going to do the same thing. So I'm really lucky to have the support system that I have, and they're the reasons why I am still here.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
We're back on Golf Today. This week, superstar athletes, A-list celebs compete in one of the year's top celebrity golf events. Now it's 35th year. Can you believe that? The American Century Championship, 54 holes, modified Stableford, features some of the biggest names in sports and entertainment. How about Robbie Gould? Good guy, great kicker. He's teeing up this week at Tahoe. All pro, first 11 years in Chicago. Tough place to kick, but he was money. Went out to San Francisco, closed out his career. Dependable from distance and from short range. And great to have Robbie with us on this Wednesday. 18 years in the NFL, and now you got this celebrity racket going on. Robbie, how did you get involved in the celebrity circuit?
Well, it was a lot of fun. There was a lady who had talked to me about the American Century Championship 15 years ago, and I got a late invite to come out here. And I know that this was the pinnacle of not only the summer, because a week from now I would end up going to training camp. Now I get to go home and just hang out with the kids and have some fun. So, I got the late invite. You look forward to it every year. This is like a family reunion of seeing the celebrities, seeing the clients. Seeing the NBC family come out to South Lake Tahoe. I mean, there's not a better venue and or picturesque place to spend 5 or 6 days in the end of your summer. So it should be a lot of fun. They got a great group of guys. I know you guys are going to talk to Marty Fish, I think, a little later. Watching him play, get some practice round tips from him, and hopefully finish top 20.
Robbie, you've been in high-pressure situations before where all the eyeballs and all the stress is on you. How does that compare to being on the first tee of a golf tournament where the gallery's there and maybe you're not as sure of where the ball is going as you used to be in your day job?
Well, it's funny. The first time I came out here to play, I was playing great in the practice rounds. It's like, oh man, everyone talking about the first tee shot of the tournament, you know, whatever, not a big deal. I'm used to 70,000 people in the stands. I get up to the first tee shot on Friday and I'm shaking and I have to back off the ball 3 times. I'm like, Robbie, just hit it and wherever it goes, it goes. But you know, it's a situation where you're not as comfortable. It's something you're not used to doing. So it was really unique to be able to use that moment on the first tee at the American Century into my normal day job, because there's gonna be times in a game where the wind or the field conditions might put you in a little bit of an uncomfortable situation. And at the end of the day, you're using something you did in a golf tournament to help what you do on a regular basis. So the first tee shot's definitely daunting. You just hope you have driver in your hand and not a hybrid. you can hit it anywhere with a driver. You know, the hybrid, it's a little thin. The wind doesn't help you here.
You had such a great NFL career. First in Chicago, you're out in San Francisco with my buddies Matt Maiocco, writers like Matt Barrows, Brian Murphy, great radio voice, out in San Francisco. 18 seasons. Like, how did you know it was time to hang them up, or did the league kind of tell you, Robbie, your days are numbered?
Well, we took a lot of opportunities last year, just based on where I was in my career and making decisions based on what would make sense for the future of playing and kind of staying in the league. For me, I just Didn't love any of the opportunities that came available. And I looked at the situation in December and just said, you know, I knew that my time was up. I did the fire there to compete and do it at a high level. Just wasn't as big of a priority for me as it had been in the past. So I decided to step away from the game of golf or from football and try to play some more golf and be around the family more and try to prepare for this. Although I will tell you, kids playing baseball, I have young kids and playing lacrosse, coaching high school football now to try to give back into the community. My golf game is probably three rounds in. So usually if there's no expectation out here to want to compete at a high level, for me, I usually end up playing better. So I'm pretty excited to tee it up this weekend.
You've obviously had a lot of cool moments in your NFL career. We just saw a photograph of you there with a trophy with Fred Couples. What's been the coolest moment in your golf career so far?
That was definitely by far one of them. I had the pleasure of having him be a captain of one of the events I played in a few years ago. I was able to play with Freddie in the Encompass Championship on the Senior Tour. Well, now Champions Tour, I should say, in Chicago about 6 years ago. So being able to have him coach you, take some golf lessons from him throughout the week, see kind of how the Ryder Cup, really, it was like a Ryder Cup feel. We, you know, it was Ben Roethlisberger, Michael Vick. You know, the other side of the world team had a bunch of cricket players and soccer players like Harry Kane. So to me, it was really unique to be in that situation and then to be able to hold a trophy with him and have that picture to be able to tell, you know, he was my captain. But Ernie Els was the other captain. And I'll tell you what, those two guys, their swings, it's just, there's a reason they call Ernie Els the Big Easy, because it's just smooth and very jealous of both of them. I wish I could copy that for sure.
Now, wait a minute, Robbie. In football, it's hiked and then it's just sitting there. And then in golf, the ball's just sitting there looking at you. Are there any similarities, carryover, you can take from your previous job to your celebrity competitions?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of similarities for kickers because it's about swing planes. It's about swinging easy. It's about lining up the target line, swinging down a target line. You know, it's funny. You look at a lot of situations from golf, and I definitely used it in the NFL. You're getting ready for a game-winning kick. You have a five-foot putt to save here, double bogey to not lose points. And you're going through the same mentality of, okay, line this up. Here's what the pace should be. Here's what this should look like and visualize it. So to be able to have a job that allowed you to kind of help you with golf, but then use the mentality of golf to help you with football and kicking, definitely served a very huge purpose in my development for both sports.
Well, Robbie, have a great week taking out Marty Fish. You can always try to tackle him. I know you were a kicker, but occasionally you got to try to make a tackle as well. Have fun out in Tahoe.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, there he is, Robbie Gould, one of the best to ever do it. Don't miss Travis Kelce. He's back from touring with Taylor out in Europe. Got Charles Barkley, Colin Jost, and other celebrities as they hit the links at Edgewood Tahoe Golf Course in this year's American Century Championship. All the action Friday through Sunday on NBC Golf Channel and Peacock.
It's a major week on the LPGA Tour, the Amundi Evian Championship, and someone with happy memories of that event, Angela Stanford, the 2018 winner, one of seven victories on the LPGA Tour. She competed in 98 consecutive majors, a streak that just ended at the U.S. Women's Open, and a veteran of six Solheim Cups as well.
It is great to be joined now by the 2018 champ, Angela Stanford. So nice to be with you. Imagine it never gets old going back to a venue where you've won, especially a major championship venue. What's the week been like so far?
Well, I got here late last night, but you're right. I mean, I came out today and practiced a little bit and played nine holes, and it never gets old, and, you know, it's beautiful here. So, yeah, it's always a fun week, and always, always good memories.
Angela, we've seen a lot of attention this summer on Lexi Thompson walking away from the game at the age of 29. You're out there still going strong at the age of 46, still playing a pretty full schedule out there. What keeps you going? Is it just as simple as love of the game?
I think so. Well, I have to tell you, this is my last year, too. I'm going to give Lexi a hard time for raining on my parade. But yeah, this is my last year also. So I'm trying to just get it all in. I'm trying to play as much as I can, or the ones I love this last year. And I'm thinking this is my last major ever that I'm going to play. So it's been pretty emotional day so far. But yeah, I think, you know, I love to compete. I love the game. I don't know. People call me stubborn. That word probably fits best, but I've just loved it. I love the LPGA Tour. I've loved being out here, and I just always felt like I could get a little bit better. And, but I think it's time to go now.
These decisions clearly not taken lightly. How did you know that it was time to walk away?
You know, I worked really hard this off season, really tried to play well this year, and I'm barely making cuts, or I'm missing cuts by one. And you just feel it. I asked a bunch of veteran players, like, how do you know when it's time to go? And, you know, they all said the same thing, you know, when you know. And so I think for me, I worked really hard this off season, and I'm just not getting the results that I used to get. I don't feel like I can, compete like I used to. So I think it's just time, but grateful for all my time out here for sure.
Stepping away as a week-to-week competitive player, of course, doesn't mean that you don't have any other goals or ambitions left in this game. What are those, Angela? I mean, would you like to be a Solheim Cup captain going forward?
Gosh, I would love that. I would love that opportunity. I would love to play some of our Legends events. I'm really looking forward to those and help hopefully build that tour a little bit. I kind of wish we had more opportunities there. So I think we got a ways to go, but I'm looking forward to playing some of those events. And hopefully, you know, I really enjoyed doing TV last year. So hopefully they'll let me come back and do some TV next year. So I still want to stay involved with the LPGA Tour. Again, I love this tour. And it's not an easy decision. And honestly, I've been thinking about not playing for the last couple of years. So it's nice to be in a place where emotionally and mentally I'm ready to go now.
And physically, you're in one of the most beautiful parts of the world. It's a golf course, however, that seems to be receiving mixed reviews from some players. In fact, Lexi Thompson, as you know, once again, not competing. What are your thoughts on the golf course and the venue, as this, of course, is the LPGA's fifth major championship?
Well, I mean, I think you have to be very precise here. You have to be very accurate. I think it has its own challenges with the lies. You never have a level lie. Ball's always below your feet or above your feet. I think it's very unique. I love that we come here. It's very different from all of our other majors. And you know, let's face it, Evian's put in a lot of money to this event. This is their 30th year anniversary, and they've supported women's golf, and they keep making it better and better. So, you know, it's a major tournament. And, you know, I've always felt like if it's a major, you got to go and play.
It's almost 25 years since you played your first major championship, Angela. A streak that recently ended at the US Women's Open. What are you proudest of when you do walk away and put the clubs in the trunk? What are you going to be proudest of? Is it the trophies you won? Is it the way you conducted yourself over the course of your career? Is it the players you beat? What will you take most pride in?
I mean, winning is obviously, you know, you remember those moments. But, you know, I look at the tour when I came out here in 2001 and where we are now. And I hope I was a small part of that. I think I can walk away being pretty proud of the fact that we're at a better place than we've ever been. So if I was just a small part of that, whether it's the pro-ams or, you know, showing up and playing as much as I can, or off-site pro-ams, whatever I've done to promote the LPGA Tour, I think I'm going to walk away knowing that, you know, I gave it everything I had for 24 years, and hopefully we're in a better spot.
From Saginaw Sling to Major Champs, been so fun watching you compete over the years, including this week. Hope it's a great one, Angela. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And here's where you can watch Angela, Evian Championship, 6 a.m. Eastern Time tomorrow and Friday on Golf Channel and Peacock. And then get your coffee ready. over the weekend. Coverage continues 4 a.m. Eastern time, both Saturday and Sunday. Back in a moment.
Rory McIlroy has resurfaced, and he's defending his caddy and his decision not to talk to the media after that Sunday in Pinehurst. We're going to hear what the world number two had to say. And Davis Thompson had a pretty great Sunday just 3 days ago when he won the John Deere Classic. He joins us from Scotland to talk about his first win and what comes next. And Marty Fish beat both Federer and Nadal before turning to golf. So we're going to ask him to help Damon get over a crushing loss in his B-flight tennis match this week as Golf Today rolls on.
Golf Today.
Welcome back into Golf Today, Eamon Lynch, alongside Damon Hack, who is still licking his wounds from his aforementioned B-flight tennis match the other night when it just seems as though the old man ran out of gas.
Yeah, congrats to Brian Herr. I actually won the first set 7-6, and he beat me 2-1 to take the second and third sets. I hope Marty Fish has some advice for a player north of 50.
Kids must just be so embarrassed.
They are. Looking forward to talking to Marty Fish. Looking forward to talking about Rory McIlroy making his first appearance on tour since that agonizing near miss at the U.S. Open last month where he finished runner-up to Bryson DeChambeau. Now, after the loss, Rory took to social media, didn't speak to the media at Pinehurst. He announced on social plan to take a few weeks away from the game to process and build himself back up for his title defense this week. He spoke with the media today at the Genesis Scottish Open.
Do you have any regrets about the way you left after the round rather than staying and speaking to anyone?
Absolutely not. No. There's nothing that I could have said that was not that, I mean, it would have been good because you guys would have been able to write something about it or had a few quotes from me, but no offense, you guys were the least of my worries at that point.
The world number two was also asked about criticism directed towards his caddy, Harry Diamond.
In the last few weeks, in the sort of dust settling from Pinehurst, there's been quite a lot of criticism online from some high-profile people, Hank Caney, Smiley Kaufman, etc., of Harry. Strikes me, just my opinion, that sometimes he's held to a higher standard than other caddies. I'm wondering what your take is on some of the criticism that you've seen and also what he brings to you deep into a major championship.
Yeah, you know, it's certainly unfair. Hank Haney's never been in that position. Smiley has been in that position once, and I love Smiley. And he was out there with us on 18, but just because Harry's not as vocal or as loud with his words as other caddies, you know, it doesn't mean that he doesn't say anything, that he doesn't do anything. And I just wish that, you know, these guys that criticize when things don't go my way, they never say anything good when things do go my way. So where were they when I won Dubai earlier this year, or Quail Hollow, or the two FedEx Cups that I've won with Harry, or the three race to Dubai's, or the whatever. So they're never there to say Harry did such a great job when I win, but they're always there to say he did such a, you know, they criticize when we don't win. So at the end of the day, they're not there. They're not in the arena. They're not the ones that are hitting the shots and making the decisions. And, you know, if someone said to me once, if you would never take advice from these people, then you'd never take their criticisms either. So I certainly wouldn't go to Hank Haney for advice. And like, I love Smiley, but you know, I think I know what I'm doing out there. And so does Harry.
Fascinating back and forth, Eamon. I'll never forget, I had dinner with a PGA Tour winner one time. We were having a very similar conversation about Harry Diamond. He said two things, that Rory has to be comfortable with whoever's carrying the bag, A. But he also said, if you are Rory McIlroy, one of the best to ever do it, one of the greatest of all time, your caddy should be of a similar ilk. Tiger and Steve Williams, Phil and Bones, Joe Lacava and Tiger, Joe Lacava and Freddie Couples. And they feel like You don't want a good caddy. You don't want a very good caddy or a great caddy. You need an all-time great caddy for a player like Rory McIlroy.
And who makes that decision as to who is a great all-time caddy? It's made by the player,
right.
And it's made based on the player's record. And Rory McIlroy has a heck of a record, and he's got a heck of a record in the years that he's been working with Harry Diamond as well. And, you know, Harry Diamond knows what he's doing out there. There was a time Harry Diamond was the better golfer than Rory McIlroy. He's won high-level amateur events in Ireland as well. And, well, it's not an unreasonable debate to have in a situation like that whether or not a caddy ought to have done more. There's no problem with even raising these criticisms. What I find interesting is it's all based on the assumption that Rory McIlroy is willing to be overruled by another caddy. That's nonsense. Maybe he was when he was a rookie and JP was on his back. And he was an old grizzled caddy. Rory was pretty much new to the professional ranks. Didn't really know his way around as much. He was willing to take the advice or be overruled by a caddy a little more often. Rory McIlroy is the captain of his own ship now. And, you know, Harry has actually said to me in the past, he wishes there were a shot clock where there was a minimum amount of time Rory McIlroy had to take because he's so decisive in what he wants to do. And in a situation like that at Pinehurst, it's an awfully big ask that a caddy would recognise not just the significance of the moment, which I'm sure Harry McIlroy or Harry Diamond did, but the idea that he would have to mind read Rory McIlroy and try to take him out of whatever zone he was in on the 15th tee with that tee shot, for example. That's an enormous gamble you're asking a caddy to take, that an intervention would actually be a positive contribution to the conversation.
But the dynamic of the childhood friend versus the Steve Williams who once called Tiger Woods off a putt at Medina to change the read on the break, or a Bones being able to challenge Phil Mickelson, sometimes uncomfortably inside the ropes, and that maybe Harry Diamond does not have that gear.
Go back 2 years when he won at Quail Hollow. He called Rory McIlroy off a shot when that was almost, he'd just taken a drop in the hazard at Quail Hollow on the 18th hole. And Harry Diamond called him off that shot, told him to pitch out, get on the green, and we'll work our way from there. And Rory McIlroy ended up winning a tournament because Harry called him off the shot on the 18th hole when he had just hit a lousy shot. That the idea that, as McIlroy said, you know, Harry isn't the most vocal guy out there, but the notion that Harry is unfit to be on the bag it's laughable.
Yeah, and if Bryson DeChambeau struggles with that long bunker shot or Rory makes a couple more putts down the stretch, no one even mentioned that this week in a press room at the Scottish Open. Well, it was Davis Thompson's show on Sunday at the John Deere Classic. As you know, the 25-year-old picked up a four-shot win for his maiden victory on the PGA Tour in his 63rd start. Becomes the ninth first-time winner on tour this season and is the 24th player, think about that, to break the John Deere Classic, his first PGA Tour win. Nice moment for him and his wife. And joined now by the winner of the John Deere Classic, Davis Thompson joins us now from Scotland. Congratulations, Davis. You know, we saw the tears, the hug with Holly Grace on the green in Silvis. Why do you think the emotion hit you so hardly in your first PGA Tour win?
I just think it was a big sigh of relief. Just a lot of hard work went into it. And once that final putt went in, I could just kind of let my emotions go and just enjoy the moment. And seeing Holly Grace, it just brought me to tears. And it was just a really cool moment, something that I'll never forget.
Davis, you won in Illinois. We now find you in Scotland. I'm assuming there haven't been much time for celebrations in between.
No, it's kind of weird. You know, win last week, and then it's right back to preparing for another event. So, I'll prepare for Scottish and then the Open, and then, hopefully get home and celebrate with friends and family.
Probably for the best. I don't think you'd want to be looking at that wallpaper with a hangover. Anyway, we've seen a lot of guys who are going for their first win on the PGA Tour enter the final round with a lead and start to play a little bit conservatively. You really put the gas pedal down when you went out there on Sunday and shot a really low round. Was that part of your mentality entering the day to just keep being aggressive?
I think so. Conditions were soft and I knew the wind wasn't going to blow that much. So I had a feeling scores were going to be low, and yeah, I knew I needed to stay aggressive, and making a long putt on the first just kind of kicked things going and kind of made me pretty comfortable, and also had a great up and down on two, which helped out a lot.
Davis, we had your coach Eric Eshelman on Golf Central with Steve Burkowski and Tripp Eisenhower, and one thing he has said through the years was that the top players on the PGA Tour typically are with their coach for a long, long time. Rory McIlroy, Michael Ban, and you think Scottie Scheffler with Randy Smith. You've been with Eric since the age of 12. Do you agree with that notion that the long relationship with a coach leads to an historically great career?
Yeah, I think so. I just think over time you build that trust, and you know, like Eric says a lot, we kind of finish each other's sentences, and when I'm hitting it bad, I usually know what to work on. So when I go see Eric, it's usually nothing major. So yeah, just being able to have that maintenance and obviously form that relationship over time, it develops a lot of trust, and you're able to not work on really anything major, just kind of just maintain your golf swing.
You're in Scotland now, Davis. What is your experience level like with links golf? Is that the kind of golf that you've played a lot of, or do you embrace that kind of challenge?
Yeah, definitely embrace the challenge. This is my first time over here to Scotland, so I don't really have a lot of experience. So we'll see if I have any beginner's luck over here. But it's definitely unique, and I'm looking forward to it. It's definitely a cool setting.
So you're learning links golf. You're also answering phone calls and text messages. A lot of us in the golf industry familiar with your dad, Todd, Georgia Bulldog like yourself, out the RSM Classic Tournament Director. You've called him he's your best friend, you've said. What was that first phone call like with your dad?
Yeah, it was a little emotional. I called him on the way to the airport after I finished all my media obligations. And, yeah, I mean, he was just really proud of me. And that's something that, you know, thankfully he's never really pushed me to play golf. He's always wanted me to just be successful as a man first, and then whatever I did second. He was always going to support me, and yeah, I'm just thankful that he pushed me as a man first as opposed to pushing me as a golfer. So but just to have that relationship with my dad, and just you know, he's just always been there for me, so it was just awesome to call him and talk to him. I know he was itching to get up there and go to the tournament, but unfortunately it didn't work out. But I'll see him when I get home, and yeah, it'll be a good time.
You got a pretty big date next week as well, Davis. You just qualified for your first Open Championship at Royal Troon. Do you have any plans to try to hook up with any of the other guys there and try to absorb as much knowledge that they might have of links golf and practice rounds that you don't have yourself yet?
Yeah, I think so. That was something somebody gave me some advice about, that is just trying to play practice rounds with guys who have had success over here. And yeah, that's something I'll definitely seek out towards the end of this week. And hopefully I can go play some practice rounds with some guys and pick their brains. And I'm just looking forward to it. It's just kind of a cherry on top of the win last week.
Dave, as I first interviewed you, you were a sophomore at Georgia. Ran into you at the U.S. Open at Wingfoot when you had that great first day. You seem like the same person as you were then. Does this win change you or your goals in any way? Or are you going to be the same guy that you've always been?
Hopefully I'll be the same guy as I've always been. You know, golf's just something I do. It's not who I am. And yeah, as far as goals are concerned, it definitely kind of changes the outlook of the year. I'll definitely be in the playoffs now, which is huge. And you know, the goal now is to prepare the best I can and go play well this week in the Open, and then finish off the season strong, and hopefully make East Lake. So, yeah, it's just kind of changed my perspective on the year. Early on in the year, the goal is just to make the playoffs, and now I'm kind of crossed that off my list, and now the goal is just to finish the season strong.
Well, we appreciate you taking some time to talk to us from Scotland. And bear in mind, Davis, Tom Watson won the first Open Championship he ever played in as well. Good luck next week.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Here's a look at the Comcast Business Tour Top 10. With that win on Sunday, Davis Thompson earned 500 points, moved him up to 22nd in the standings. Since 2009, every player who's finished in the Comcast Business Tour Top 10 has made it to the Tour Championship. So if you're on this list, there's a good chance you're going to have a tee time at Eastlake in August.
From Atlanta to Kansas, third edition of the U.S. Adaptive Open concludes today at Sand Creek Station in Newton. National Championship showcases the world's best golfers with disabilities, serving as the USGA's 15th National Championship, showcasing and celebrating the adaptive golf community by providing them the stage to achieve their dreams and compete for a national championship. How about Kip Pulford? Got it done a year ago, neurological impairment category.
It's his third on the par 5 fourth hole. Knocked that up to 6 feet, now trying to make the putt for birdie.
Yeah, rolling it beautifully, gets it to 2 under on his day.
Here's Simon Lee in the intellectual impairment category, par 4 sixth from 20 feet. Wow. That gets him to red numbers, 1 under on his day.
You see how still he kept his head? That was fantastic. Now here's Simon on the par 4 eighth, another 20 footer.
He's finding his range, Damon. Made the turn, 234, but he's still chasing Kip Pulford.
Sometimes the hole looks like a big bucket. This is Kip on the par 5, 10th. He hit 2 balls out of bounds, so this is his 6th from the fairway.
The back hole location from 6 feet for double. That might be one of the prettiest doubles you're going to see all year long.
Fist pump as well. How about Bailey Bish? Par 4, 11th. 8 feet to safe par.
Slight left to right breaker. Rolls that one in. Now on to the par 3, 13th. Another lengthy putt for par.
Wow. Oh, yes, on the last roll.
That stick is working.
Yeah, big smile there. How about Kim Moore, the 2022 overall female champ? Lower limb impairment category. 15 feet for birdie.
Makes that a final round score of 75.
Got Ryan Jackson, the overall female champ from a year ago.
That was from 6 feet at 17, finished with a third round 79. And now Bailey Bish on the 18th, a little tap in. Makes that, finishes with 77. And she's your 2024 overall female champion and the neurological impairment category winner. And here's some leaderboard action. We start with the men's. Kip Popert retains his title. 4-stroke victory with a final round of 71 over Simon Lee, with Brendan Lawler in third place.
Saw some great golf over these 3 days. Bailey Bish, final round 77, good enough for a 4-shot victory over Kim Moore. Able to get the job done in the women's overall. Pleased to be joined once again by Andy Stevenson. He's been out there in Newton, Kansas for us all week. The tournament's just concluded. Kip Popert and Bailey Bish getting the job done. What should we know about the winners, Andy?
Well, Kip Popert is fast becoming the best disabled golfer in the world. He won the G4D Open, the British equivalent of this tournament, if you like, at Woburn in May. He won this tournament last year and has now defended his title. He actually played in final qualifying for the Open Championship a couple of weeks ago. Didn't quite make it, but that's a sign of Popert's ambitions and how good a player he thinks he is. And when he plays like he has done this week, you know, 14 under par around Sand Creek Station is mightily impressive, and he was a good few shots ahead of the field. In terms of Bailey Bish from Tucson, Arizona, very likable young lady, and she is one of a group of female players who might not have been their debut this year, but they're certainly kind of a new group of female players who are shaking things up, and I'm sure Bailey Bish is going to feature on the leaderboard of this tournament for years to come.
And the third year of the Adaptive Open, it's obviously, as Mike Wan said to us yesterday on the show, it's sort of an evolving championship. This year they introduced a cut after 36 holes for the first time. How was that received among the competitors?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, that, because, you know, me personally, as a broadcaster, as a spectator looking at this event, I was a bit concerned about the introduction of the cut, because this tournament is partly all about inclusion, trying to encourage as many players with a range of disabilities to not only take up the game but play it competitively. However, I think what the USGA have been trying to do this week, and it has to be said that a few players I've spoken to really do support this, they're trying to make this tournament feel like an elite competition, just like all of their other USGA competitions. So having all of the field playing for the first 2 days, and then the elite, if you like, just here on the final day playing in pairs, that does make it feel like a major tournament. So I'm sure they're going to stick with that format for next season, and let's see how the players in general respond. But certainly this week, I think the reaction to the cut has been largely positive.
You say it feels like a major tournament. Does it feel as though in year three, this tournament now is firmly established?
Absolutely. You know, we've been at Pinehurst the first 2 years. Moving here, you know, the town of Newton, to a certain extent, Wichita and the surrounding areas have also supported this tournament. You know, we saw signs at the airport, for example, greeting the players, that kind of thing. And the atmosphere they've played in this week really do elevate this tournament. We move on to Woodmont Country Club for the next 2 years of this US Adaptive Open. So I think you only need to look at the strength of the field. And, you know, I've been speaking to some of the category impairment winners as they've been coming through the 18th. You speak to them and they all talk about how delighted they are to be playing in a tournament that feels as special as this one does. So I think, you know, there's huge development and growth. And as we talked about all week, you know, it's a reminder that golf can be played by anyone, you know, regardless of what adjustments you might need, what equipment adaptations you might need. You can pick up a golf club in some form or another and play competitively if that's what you want to do.
An award ceremony coming up at 5 p.m. Eastern time on Golf Central. So well said, Andy. Thank you so much for your contributions all week long.
Thanks very much.
And our next guest, the pretty busy guy, Camilo Villegas, playing the tour, assistant captain of the President's Cup, chairman of the Players Advisory Council. He's also got to find time to play the Olympics, which he just qualified for. He's here right after this break.
Folks, we're less than 3 weeks away from the start of the Paris Olympics. Complete coverage of men's and women's golf will be right here on Golf Channel. How about a five-time PGA Tour winner, Camilo Villegas, joining Nico Echevarria to represent Colombia at the 2024 Summer Games in Paris. And Camilo is playing in this week's ISCO Championship and joins us now. Congratulations on qualifying for the Olympics in Paris. Camilo, you also qualified for Rio and Tokyo, but opted not to play. Why is now the right time to compete in the Olympics?
Well, we go back to 2016 and we had Zika going on. I wasn't playing very good either. I was kind of battling to keep my card. You fast forward to 2020 and I wasn't playing very good. I had to battle to try to maintain my PGA Tour card. And I always said that you don't live off an Olympic medal, but you do live off a PGA Tour card. So it was a tough decision to make. And then we fast forward again to last year when I win in Bermuda, and I knew that was going to have me exempt for the next 2 years, and that would put me in a good position to make the Olympic team. And I was very excited, and it was actually a very easy decision this year to say yes, I'll be there. So I'm really looking forward, and it's going to be a interesting, different, and unique experience that I can't wait to go there.
And you're not going to be alone. You'll be joined by Nico Echevarria, fellow Colombian, who you've called your little brother. How did this relationship begin?
Well, I mean, we grew up on the same golf course, Medellin, Campestre Medellin. Nico's dad, Emilio, and my dad play golf for a long time. And then I played a lot of golf with his brother, Andres Echevarria. And then here comes Nico. So Nico playing on the PGA Tour is very special. It's very special that two individuals from a small city and where golf is so small are playing on the PGA Tour. Not only that, but Nico goes and wins in Puerto Rico last year. I was able to be there. And then I win in Bermuda, and Nico was able to be there. So it's pretty unique. It's pretty crazy, but I'm happy to have him here on tour, and he keeps growing as a person, as a player, and a bright future ahead.
Camilo, there's a tendency among those of us from countries where golf is very well established to think that Olympic golf doesn't really
matter that much. But there are a lot of countries where it does matter because it leads to national sports funding for juniors if it is an Olympic sport. What is the situation with golf in Colombia? Can it benefit from being an Olympic sport?
Well, I think it'd be pretty harsh to say that Olympic golf is not very important. I think it is very important. I mean, yes, we have our majors and we have a lot going on, but Olympics is Olympics, and I think this being the third edition of golf being in the Olympics, it keeps growing, especially amongst the players. I'm sure there's still like mixed feelings here and there, but I keep hearing more and more positive input from the players. Just the experience being around the Olympic athletes, and yes, it makes it a unique week. But I think it is important, and in our country, in countries like us, it only helps grow the game.
The game's been a bit of a struggle for you lately in terms of your form and performance. What has been the frustration? Are you healthy, or is it just kind of one of these swing cycles that every professional golfer goes through?
I've been healthy. That's very positive. I've been healthy, and finishing the year like I did last year was very special. After struggling for the whole year with a lot of swing changes, it started paying off toward the end of the year. Was I expecting to win in Bermuda? To be realistic, no. But I played great in Mexico the week before, and I kept riding that good play, end up winning. Come back at the beginning of the year, and I was a little bit lost. I go to Kapalua, and it was kind of windy, and I kind of lost it. I lost a little bit my swing. My old tendencies came back, and it's been about we always knew that 2024, sorry, that 2023 and 2024 were going to be tough years. And the main focus has been to kind of have the swing be my swing later this year to be ready for 2025. So I've been patient. That doesn't mean it's not frustrating. Trust me, it's not fun to play bad golf out here. Not only that, but the competition keeps getting better and better. These young kids are great. You're seeing what's going on with this college kids coming out and not only winning at the beginning of the year, but contending in events. So the game of golf and the competition are in a very strong position. And hey, I'm 42. I'm not saying I can't be out here, but I got to keep grinding and putting the work and the hours to play against the young boys.
Well, you're not just mindful about your own game. You're an assistant captain for Mike Weir in the upcoming President's Cup. How close do you feel that you guys are putting together a winning international team that might get over the hump later this fall in Montreal?
Yeah, you know what? President's Cup was very special for me a couple years ago in Charlotte when Trevor called me, and then now that Weirzy wants me on the team, it's an honor. It's an honor to be on the team, and we're doing a lot of great stuff. I think we struggled for different reasons, and the U.S. seems to be extremely confident, and they keep beating us year over year, but at some point things have to change, and I think we've put up some good teams that have a chance to win the cup, and it will be very good if this year we can pull through. I think playing in Canada is going to be important. I think we're going to have some fan support that it's going to be cool, and I know Weirzy is continuing the good work that Ernie Els did in Australia, and then the great work that Trevor Immelman came up with in Charlotte. So it's a work in progress. I think there's a purpose behind making our team better, more united, a lot of cultures, a lot of different languages, a lot of stuff going on, and making this event even more special than it really is.
You're a busy guy, Camilo, because you're also the chairman of the Players Advisory Council as well. You're going to join the PGA Tour's board in January. How much of your time is taken up on a week-to-week basis just with other tour players coming up to ask you what's happening with changes to the tour, or asking your advice or what you know?
Yeah, of course. That's another honor, being as chairman. As the chairman of the pack, it's not the heavy lifting that the guys on the board are doing. I mean, I know I talk with a lot of them on a regular basis, and those guys are putting a lot of time into kind of figuring things out and doing the best for the game. It's been a couple of tricky years, But I think the game of golf will win. At the end of the day, the game of golf will win. The game is bigger than whatever's going around, the money, the this, the that. But it hasn't been too bad for me. I mean, I try to stay involved. I try to read all the material, and I try to prepare myself to when the big job comes, which is next year, I'll be ready.
Camilo, thanks for fitting us into your busy schedule. Best of luck this week, and enjoy the Olympics as well.
Thanks, guys.
Camilo, by the way, avid biker, so you know he'll be watching the toughest cycling race of the year. The Tour de France takes the world's top cyclists on a mountainous 21-day journey towards the first ever grand finale in Nice. Stream exclusive coverage all race long now through July 21st on Peacock.
We're back in golf today. Let's switch gears to the Korn Ferry Tour. Back in April, Georgia native Stephen Fisk won the Club Car Championship at the Landings Golf and Athletic Club. Georgia Southern University alum birdied three of the final four holes of regulation, went on to beat Rob Oppenheim in sudden death playoff. It was the first win of his career. And life gets a little sweeter for Fisk. Finished runner-up at the Memorial Health Championship 2 weeks ago, and with that finish, he moved atop the Korn Ferry Tour's season-long standings and has pretty much cemented his top 30 spot. That has been enough to clinch his PGA Tour card for 2025.
And Stephen Fisk joins us now from TPC Colorado. Congratulations on earning your PGA Tour playing privileges for 2025. You acknowledged earlier that maybe you weren't ready for a card earlier in your career, that 2023 perhaps wouldn't have been the right time. Why is now the right time, Stephen?
I think I did a lot of work kind of this off season and tried to get my mind in a good spot so that when I did eventually get my PGA Tour card, I'd be more ready for it, because the goal is not just to get to the PGA Tour, but to get out there and stay out there for a long time.
Stephen, there was such a significant turnaround in your form that led to your win on the Korn Ferry Tour earlier this year and a lot of high finishes since then. What specifically did you work on that turned things around for you so dramatically?
Yeah, you know, honestly, it was a whole lot of everything, but my ball striking's been really good. I feel like I've taken some really good ownership of my golf swing and tried to figure out some of my tendencies and, you know, work around those and get those sharp every single week. And then honestly, you know, every time you're playing good golf, you're probably holing a bunch of putts too. So I've been pretty consistent all around and just kind of been building towards some really good golf.
I read that your parents owned a par 3 course when you were growing up, and you never took a lesson until you turned professional. And I traded messages earlier with Justin Parsons, who you've done some work with, and he said it was an interesting process for you to go through, where you actually get more understanding and more ownership of your own swing and go from being such a natural golfer to actually kind of figuring out how to alleviate injury and to produce more consistent performances. What was that process like for you?
Yeah, you know, it was kind of a leap of faith to go and work with JP. But, you know, with some of the injuries I had in the past, I felt like, you know, that stuff was kind of flaring back up again. And, you know, we got rid of a bunch of shaft lean and tried to alleviate a lot of wrist pain and hand pain that I'd had in the past. And, you know, he was somebody that was willing to work with me on my swing. And, you know, he's not a cookie cutter coach where they try and make everybody swing it the exact same way. And he worked around a lot of my tendencies and some things that some other instructors might see as flaws, but things that I've kind of ingrained over the years and, you know, probably would have a hard time changing. But it's been a great process, and, you know, he's been a great ally throughout all of it.
Your wrist injuries were pretty serious. You've, you know, played golf all over the world. You've been challenged in this game. You were a volunteer assistant coach at Georgia Southern, where you attended. What perspective do you have for all the things that you've had to challenge, face, and overcome?
Yeah, I think being injured definitely makes you miss the game, definitely makes you appreciate being able to be out here and be on tour. Because when I was injured, I didn't have any status at all. So that was a difficult process. And, you know, to kind of go through a little bit of adversity and come out on the other side a better player and a better person, I think goes a long way to, you know, being on the course and off the course.
Stephen, there have been some concerns lately that the Korn Ferry Tour graduates aren't getting as many starts on the PGA Tour as perhaps they did in recent years due to some of the changes that are going on, the creation of signature events, things like that. Do you pay any attention to any of that noise, or do you just kind of focus on what you can control?
You know, it's definitely something that you think about. You know, the higher up you finish on our points list out here on Korn Ferry, the better. And, you know, regardless of if you get a PGA Tour card or not, if you can get some extra starts early in the year, get some more experience, some more playing opportunities, I think that could alleviate a little bit of stress. So it's definitely something that I think a lot of guys pay attention to. But, you know, there's still going to be opportunities for everybody, and you just try and take advantage of good golf when it comes your way.
Stephen, there are guys out there who have standing practice round Tuesdays or money games, different things to stay sharp and to kind of keep each other honest and look out for each other. Who's going to be your crew out there on the PGA Tour? Maybe some players you can lean on for advice, practice rounds, where to stay, where to eat, et cetera.
Yeah, you know, we'll see how many of my buddies get PGA Tour cards for next year. You know, maybe split some houses, play some practice rounds. I lived in Athens for a couple years and played a good bit of golf with Brendan Todd and Chris Kirk. So I'm looking forward to getting to play against them week in and week out. Yeah. But it's great. You know, the Korn Ferry is a really kind of a big fraternity, I feel like, and there's 30 cards. So, you know, each guy only needs one, so you're happy when some of your buddies play good and, you know, eventually get their tour cards.
Yeah, there are a lot of Georgia Bulldogs out there, but you're a Georgia Southern guy. But, hey, all in the name of playing great golf on the next level. Congratulations, Stephen, and thanks so much for the time.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
Back on Golf Today, former pro tennis star Marty Fish received the prestigious honor of being named United States Davis Cup captain in 2019. The team he played for from 2002 to 2012 during his playing days overtook friend, housemate, and former high school classmate Andy Roddick in April 2011 to become the number one rated American in the ATP ranking, reached a career high singles of world number 7 in August of 2011. And Andy loves himself some golf since retiring from tennis. After the 2015 U.S. Open, has excelled in golf, winning the 2020 American Century Celebrity Golf Championship and now burning it up on the celebrity golf circuit, and joins us now from Tahoe. Great to see you. You're a fixture out there now, Marty, but how long did it take for you to feel really comfortable and like you belonged in the celebrity realm?
Walk into the player meeting we have tonight, and it's hard to feel like you belong. It's a pretty humbling place. It's a really special week out here. American Century Championships does such a great job of you know, making you feel welcome, making your family feel welcome, all that stuff. And you know, it's the week that we look forward to every year. So, not sure I'm comfortable. I try and thank everyone that has any input in inviting me and being as nice as I can to them, because they're the reason that I'm here, and then try and play as well as I can, because I feel like, you know, if you can win the tournament, they have to invite you back the next year.
Marty, you played a PGA Tour event a few years ago at the 3M Classic. You didn't make the cut, but you beat a lot of tour winners that week. Any desire or aspiration to do it again?
I would love to. It was such a cool experience. I mean, no one had ever played an ATP Tour event and a PGA Tour event. Aspirations of trying to do that in the same year would be super cool. But those are long gone. I would love one more opportunity, just because I just had no idea the level of stress and anxiousness and nerves. Like the nerves, the thing about the golf swing is the nerves can really mess you up. And when you get a little bit off plane, it was just, I mean, the first tee shot, Eamon, that I hit on Thursday was like, get it airborne, please, kind of thing. And I was excited to Obviously honored to, you know, play alongside those guys. I played with Chase Seifert and Seth Reeves, who were just, you know, super cool and awesome. Everybody was really nice there. I didn't want to feel like I was necessarily taking someone's spot. So I really tried to, obviously tried to play as good as I could, but not, you know, don't go out there and shoot 80, don't shoot 80, and then you go out and shoot 80. and the second day I felt a lot more comfortable. I think it was like a 73 or maybe 74 or something like that. It was a few over par. And I had it like, I didn't make a birdie the first day. So that was another thing. It was kind of just bogey, bogey, bogey. The rough was so thick. It was just, there are a lot of things that you sort of learn throughout the week that I could maybe get a little bit better and just have that one more chance just to kind of understand. I understand what that feeling is now and what that felt like. Not super unfamiliar or super different out here, to be honest, on the first tee shot, American Century, because I'm pretty nervous on that first tee shot as well. At least in Minnesota, I was able to hit driver, a little bigger sweet spot, a little bigger sweet spot. So, but it was an awesome, awesome experience, Eamon, and one that, you know, 3M certainly didn't have to do. Those guys were amazing up there, Mike Welsh and those guys. So I'll be back anytime they want me to. But Minnesota was the perfect spot for me to do it as well.
Marty, I've seen you out there a couple times in Tahoe. You look like you're still in great shape. Are you thinking about age 50, PGA Tour champions, and maybe making a run in the 15 over set?
You know, we get to play a tournament in Dallas. This year was the Invited Celebrity Classic, and it's partnered with the Champions Tour there. So we get to play with it's a really cool event for us, for me specifically, because I love golf. I watch golf every week, whether it's LPGA, PGA, LIV. Sorry, Eamon, or Champions Tour kind of stuff. I'll watch a lot of golf. And so, like, I know a lot of those guys, Steve Alker, and, like, how good he was playing. And to be paired with him a couple years ago and just kind of see how they get around the course. I love watching the women, how they get around the course as well. We get to play with them and down there at the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions down there. And so I'd love to have the time to practice the way that they're able to practice and stuff like that. But I've got 8 years. I will definitely keep my body fit. But I don't, you know, I don't know how well I can compete against them, but we do play from the same tees there in Dallas. We do play the same, you know, it's the same exact course, same tees and everything. And it's just fun to kind of put your game up near them and just kind of see where you are and how you stand. And I don't know. We'll see.
Marty, our last 20 seconds on air. My buddy here has got a hangdog look since he lost his tennis match in the B flight 2 days ago. Ooh. Give him something to pep him up.
B flight? What is this?
B flat. I'm old. I'm north of 50. Give me a tip, Marty, to help my tennis game. My forehand is weak. I'm a pusher.
Forehand is weak. Get to the net. Get to the net.
Good advice. I still got my wheels. Marty, thanks for the time. Have a great week in Tahoe.
Thanks for having me, guys.
There he is. Former American number one. Olympic silver medalist. This has been a lot of fun. Everyone, enjoy your Wednesday. See you soon.